Last time we were looking into the structure of language and seeing that structure is not actually the word, though the word has to fit into the structure and somehow reflect it or communicate through that structure, because otherwise we will not know anything from this word. So the word comes into this mental structure, or is filling this mental structure with its presence or its intention or its particular focus of consciousness, and makes it alive. And that structure starts living and can be communicated and can be communicating. Saw that we particularly, we think by structures. We do not think by words.
We think through our heart, at least in all traditional cultures. Even now, Chinese to think has the heart.
Maybe Chinese are thinking through heart, but we are thinking through structures, unfortunately. Maybe. Oh, fortunately.
All traditional cultures talk with the heart. In Egypt, to think with the eye of the heart. In Chinese, to examine with the heart. In Sanskrit, to perceive with feeling, if you translate it. In Hebrew, in Greek. Always. But we've lost it with the cat.
Yes, when we say by heart, we don't really mean that what they meant. It's first of all, the manas itself is located in the heart. In the Vedic tradition, it comes from the heart. Mm-hmm. So there is no brain as such. Yes. So this manas, which Aurobindo describes as a sense mind, which operates by senses and oriented to senses bringing information to it and operating by it, is one particular organ of thinking. But there is other organ of thinking which is higher, buddhi, as we know. So to say, intellect, as we call it, or reason, pure reason in Kantian sense, which is not related directly to the senses and has its own domain and freedom from senses and can arrive at any conclusion regardless to what senses are feeding the manas with. So there are levels of mind. And there is much more beyond, which we are not even touching now. So thinking with the heart is the first dimension. It means something deeper than that. But there is a command which is coming somewhere from the depth, from the heart. The intention, the word is arriving from the heart. It is that heart ocean of the Veda from where the word arrives. And Brahmanaspati is the lord of that word, who is arranging the whole manifestation by this word, by this particular intention. But language is operating by Indra and not by Brihaspati. Brihaspati is the lord of the divine word, whereas Indra is the lord of the divine mind, who structured that word in a particular format, and that structure builds up or manifests the universe. So everything here is structured. We see the gap between ourselves, between these things around us. We have space, we have time, we have all the categories, we have I-ness, this-ness, and we operate. All these categories are created by the divine mind to fill the intention of the Lord to manifest himself in many. Bahusyam, may I be many. How could he be many if he alone was? If divine mind would not do this structuring and would not create a gap between those representatives of himself. So those gaps and relations between those representatives are mental categories. I'm explaining it in spatial terms. There are gaps between us. We are one and the same being, but we do not see it like that. Why? Because there is a structure. There is a mental structure which holds us apart and has and introduces meaningful relations between these parts. Why I'm saying all this so long? Because I want us to come to this definition, to think what the word may be. If it is not the structure, what is it? What do you think?
Symbol.
Symbol within the structure, yes. Within the structure it becomes a symbol immediately. But before that,
consciousness.
Right. It's something closer to consciousness.
What is a word? A word is here something speaking, and there is energy is flowing out into the form. So it is not only
on one level, yes. One thing is speaking, non-stop, blah, 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 is also the word. But there is something behind it which is expressed by this action of blah, blah, blah. And that is consciousness. There is an action of consciousness of particular kind which wants to come through and to communicate something or to manifest something which was not there. Now, I am underlining this, which was not there. It's an important part, which we do not see yet. But if we see that the word is manifesting something which was not there, there where? In this particular context, in this particular structure. Why do I say what I say now? It was not expected, or was it expected? Yes, in subjective way. In the objective way, word is expressing the same thing. But in a particular context, it plays different roles. If I say that some, for example, child did something wrong and I say, oh, you're so clever, it means that I am scolding him. So all these kind of context-related expression of intention is a very strange thing in the word. So we have a structure, we have a particular context in which something is expected to be expressed, and something comes through and we are wondering why it comes through and how it comes through. We are always wondering that something is coming through which was not expected. And we are looking for it all the time. We want that unexpected surprise to come through and to confirm our expectation. We expect a surprise all the time. We are looking for new manifestation, for ever fresh finding of ourselves. And the word is confirming it. And if it doesn't, we are dull and we are referring to structure. Does it make sense what I'm trying to say? There is a very subtle sense of this manifestation by the word. That's why all these files which were last year are not applicable anymore this year. Because there is something else expected by me who wants to see it differently, not in the same framework. If I would use these files, they are excellent files. We read them again and you will be full of surprises. But I would like to have them differently used. So what is this word? What do you think? Consciousness, the action of consciousness was one definition. The intention, the will to manifest something new, to surprise this being within with its new possibilities.
Is that why the Bible associates it with creation?
Yes, exactly.
Because it's the intent of manifestation.
Yes, and the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. The intention to manifest Himself is the Word.
You know, when Confucius was asked what he would do if he became ruler of Wei, he said, "I would rectify names and words to go deep down into the origin."
Well, he had something else in mind. He wanted to make uniformity, which actually China finally got. He succeeded to make China completely uniformal, and that's what his task was, Confucius' task, according to my understanding. He wanted to rectify everything, that the usage of the word would be the same in all provinces, and no difference. And that was the problem for China quite long, because they speak different dialects. If you take Shanghai and Beijing, they are two different languages. They write the same way, but they speak differently. So when Beijing and Shanghai people meet, they draw on the sand. You see them standing and communicating through written language, because they don't understand spoken language.
So I've seen it a little differently, I don't know. Perhaps you're correct. I saw, let's take the word aggression in Latin. Agredi is very positive. So he wanted the original meaning of the word.
Yes, well, what it has to do with Shanghai and Pekin, 1 second. I will connect myself with this. So tell you me what you want to say, because I don't really follow.
I had seen it a little differently, but I don't know that.
Aggression is in Latin, what does it mean?
It's a positive verb, to go towards the other one and say, we have a problem, we'll discuss it nicely. That's the origin of the word. And Confucius wanted to find the original meanings.
Okay. We're also still looking for original meanings. But the problem with Chinese language is that it is built differently. It's not a vocal language. It is a language of the picture, pictogram, which communicates differently, not through our expression of the vocal cords and apparatus, not through articulation that they get these meanings, but through the visual picture. And there were several theories how these pictures came into being. One of those theories was that they were first making this kind of sacrifice with the shell of the tortoise. How it was cracking, it was giving a particular sign. And from that pictogrammic thinking started, because these shamanic traditions were using it for indicating certain things and getting some signs for how to behave and what to know in that particular context. But it might be simpler. I think it can relate to our visual understanding of things. And if you see those pictograms, they are very beautiful, and they reflect something very subtle in our mental being, at least, if not to say deeper. But it is another realm altogether. I would not touch China for now, because we are dealing with language as an articulatory device, as an expression of our articulatory apparatus, and not through our sight. But we can come to it later, if we have time. So the word is an expression or intention, expression of intention of consciousness, to manifest something in a particular context, something which was not expressed, but which is wanted. Wanted by who? By the speaker. Here we are coming to the major thing. The speaker, with his I-ness, with his subjective perception, is the central being in this manifestation. He initiates or she initiates that particular process of something is wanted in this particular context. Is it a little too mental what I'm saying? No, it's fine. Because sometimes these words, they sound right, but then they are not reaching to the depth. Yes? So we can change them. It's also possible to speak differently about it. So, last time, you remember I used this particular scheme. I'm sure you remember it. And this is something about the word, what word represents. Something very interesting, and it still is not discovered fully. So the word is that intention to manifest certain meaning within particular context, but it has a particular form and it is using a context. It is wanted and it has a particular form and it uses a particular context which is full of forms. Yes? Already expecting certain meaningful intrusion of some other form. It allows it to happen. So every word or every thing, yes, has a particular name. Well, some things do not have names maybe also, but I use always this for the... What do we see here? Again, the same story. But it is a very interesting exercise. What do we really see and what is it? It's a pen. How do you know? Somebody told you or you used it as a pen. Yeah, you experienced it. It is a pen. But when you suppose you don't know that it is a pen, what would you say?
Stick.
Yes, stick. Very good. It's a stick. It's white with black. Top, bottom. Now, how do you know that it is a stick? And how do you know that it is a white? And that is top is top, and that is black, and bottom is also bottom is black.
With how do you know? Our own experience, everyone projects himself into this piece here.
You know it by the word. You do not know it otherwise. Experience is only what is supporting this particular usage, but the word is telling you what it is. Otherwise, suppose I know nothing of the word, I do not know what is white, what is black, what is stick, and what is pen, and I see this thing, what would I see? Would I see it? Maybe I would not even see it. Because my intention would be to see something I know and not something I don't know.
Exactly.
If it comes to my context, immediate, closest, proximity with me, then I will start doing something with it if I need or I am kind of have nothing else to do.
Yeah, but the baby put it first in the mouth.
Okay, it's very true to taste it, then to know it, yes? Yes? Why not? So what I'm trying to say is that there are two realities simultaneously existing in this particular regard. There is a thing in itself, which has particular qualities of the thing, top, bottom, black, white, stick-like, long, short, and so on and so forth. All comparatively it is through this structure that we know how it looks like and how it belongs to all this other structure around it, that it is not very long because there are longer things, that it is wide because there are darker things. We know comparatively what it is through the structure of its form, but we do not know of its meaning yet. and the meaning will be brought by the word. The meaning does not stay with the form. The application of the form is known through the word. There is another reality of the name, of the speech.
Yes,
yes. But even if you knew it, you will compare it and see it now in the moment of seeing it, what it is, comparing with that what you know through the word. Through the word you will reconfirm this particular thing. But if I take, for example, this thing now differently and I throw it, or I hit somebody with it, then it won't be a pen anymore. It will be something else in its usage, but it will be a pen because I know that it is a pen. But if I use it differently, it will lose its own dimension of what for it was meant to be used. So what I'm trying to say, that the name and the form are coexisting in every reality around us. There is a meaning of its application, and there is the form by which it is fitting into particular context. Now, form to fit into particular context, it is Indra's work, divine mind's work. It is that form formation which was created by the mind, structured to fit into this dimension of universe. There is a question, very stupid question, but I like it, I always ask it. How does the table knows how to be a table? Yes. How does computer know how to be a computer and not to fail, and to all that electricity inside works in that way as it is formed to work? How this chair knows to stay straight and to hold me here when all our planet is running with I don't know how many miles per second, and the whole galaxy is turning around itself, and everything is steadily here held in a particular format. How does everything know how to be that what it is? How all these suns and galaxies coexist and not clash, and not make a mess? And we can sit here among these galaxies and speak and think. Who arranged all this? So the word is within the form. The form was manifested by the word, by knowing how to be, knowing what it is for. It's not visible anymore. We are relating to it only through the form. We do not see the word. But we will see it when we apply it, when we take a particular thing and write with this, we will see the application, the intention of this particular piece or thing. And by this thing we can write, and by this thing we can read. By this microphone knows how to record, this recorder knows how to do its job. Everyone knows how to be. And how to coexist. So in this particular scheme you can see artha on one side, one dimensional reality. This is the reality of the form, or reality of power. Now I can think self, atman, shakti. The form. And this side we see nama, name. Brahma. The expanding power, the word in the deepest Vedic sense. Name and form, Brahman and Atman, Vak and Artha, the meaning.
What is Rupam?
Rupam is form.
Oh.
Form,
and name.
Step back from form and name.
The question, I've read the following, Brahman is mind, heart.
Yes, it arises from the heart.
Say yes?
Brahman is from root brih, to expand. It's a growing power. Mm-hmm. Growing because it is manifesting. It has an intent to manifest. Mm-hmm. Now these two realities coexist. And how do they coexist? Look at this thing. I put it into four different dimensions. The higher mental dimension, lower mental dimension, vital dimension, and physical dimension. Yes? Vaikari, Madhyama, Pashyanti, and Paravak in Tantric tradition. Now, this is the sign where the word appears. The word appears from the intention to manifest. This is the intention of a higher plane to manifest. It brings with itself its own knowledge of what is to be done in that particular context, and it has its form, power and knowledge. Another dimension which is important, power and knowledge. Consciousness where do I put it? On the other side. Yes, you're right.
Force. Force and consciousness.
So, what is interesting in this scheme, that on one level, this reality of this thing, which is longish and stick-like, white, black top, which is writing with ink, we know all from the word, we do not know otherwise, but it creates this form, which is ink, which is stick, which is pen, but this thing and this thing are two simultaneously coexisting realities. You can see it. There is this thing and this thing. And they are the same. Where are they the same? On what level? Yes, in their meaning, in their semantic, in their intent to do, they are the same. Here they are the same. They are crossing here on the highest level, where Paravak. So the form and the meaning of this form are one and the same in the transcendental realm. Look what happens on the lower level, on the mental level, where the indriyas are coming in, where there is already a multiplicity and creation. So you see that they split, and this is their split. They have common part, that means the intent. They have differences in form already. Their forms will be different. This is showing the difference. They are not one and the same. So the form of the word pan is different from this form pan. In the vital sense also. To make this pan as a thing is one thing, and to make a word pan is another thing. To form it within language is this, to form it within power is this. So the difference. And on the physical level, they are completely different, two dimensions, the language and the word. Here they have something in common. What do they have in common? You look at these two sides, they are in common, they are quite interesting. They belong to form images and form sounds.
The listener, the perceiver?
Yes, within ourselves we have listener and perceiver, yes. But that is not where they are common. They are common in usage, syntax, in the structure. This pen will be used in the same manner how the word pen will be used in the syntactic structure of language. They will match. They will do the same thing. They will write. And that writing has a particular relation to all other elements of the structure, in language in linguistic space and in the space outside. So this scheme kind of shows where they are one, where they are different in how, and they, where they are completely different to realities, form and name. So it is about the word, something to think about it. If you have something to say, you can interrupt any time. If not, I'm going ahead. Yes, there are several things which we could look into which are very psychologically interesting, how Tantra deals with this issue. The definition of these levels... sorry.
Now it's layers of language.
The definition of these levels on every level is why they are important, because if I read to you what Ramakantha says, you will understand immediately. The lowest level, Vaikari Nama Kriya, the lowest level is the action level, Kriya. The Madhyama Vak, where there is the balance, the middle part, where the sign was, is the jnanamayi. She creates the cognition. And the higher level, pashyanti, is the level of icha, of the intent. So intent is creating a cognition within particular structure or context, which is expressed by action on the level of speech, on the physical level. That's the definition of three levels. You can see it here for yourself. Vaikari nama kriya jnanamaya bhavati madhyamavak Icha punah pasyati sukshma sarvasam samarasa vrittihi. And pasyanti, the intent, is pervading all of them and is feeding them with its own direction to which context it comes and where it is being manifested. I'm referring to this from my early studies in the university, where I was not satisfied and couldn't understand this particular issue. Why do we have, what is the name and why it has to be brought into particular context? And I called it for myself imperativeness of name. I still remember it. It was a childish definition. Imperativeness of name, the name has imperative power to change the context. Whatever name you introduce into a particular context, it changes it by its imperative structure, so to say. Imperative, not structure.
Quality.
Quality, yes. If I say, for example, Rama, like some people sing these bhajans, Rama, 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 Rama. Every time I repeat the same word Rama, it sounds different. Why? Because the context is changed every time in Rama, the same word introduced. Every time I introduce the same word into this context, the context is changing, therefore the name Rama is different every time. There is, you cannot enter, as Heraclitus says, the same water twice. It is exactly this, that the context is always changing and always kind of calling for another name. That's why name is always authentic in its pure power and application. Does it make sense a little? This way of thinking. So this icha, as he says, this intention speech, that pasyanti flesh, which is seeing speech, which sees the meaning of its own within its own expression. It's already there. Expression and meaning are one yet. They are not divided. But when it comes and dresses itself into language, into this particular context of language, that we know that black is black from someone and white is white from someone, this is the language context, Madhyama. Then it splits into two. Then we immediately have the form and the name. The form and the name are split on the language level. And operated as if differently, but not completely differently. Pan is writing in the physical reality and Pan is writing in the linguistic reality in the same sense and has the same context. But in this reality you can use this pan for something else, which you cannot use in that reality unless it is specified. And where it is coming, another energy?
Yeah, it means with all other words, what you are saying is always changing. If you say this and that.
Yeah, where from this other energy is coming is from you. Yeah. From you who knows that context is already different. Mm-hmm. And every time you introduce this word, it is you who is bringing that difference. Mm-hmm. Well, we do not see it. We think it is the word. But it is actually your subjective perception of what you say that introduces the difference. So, Paravak, Abhinavagupta describes Paravak, the supreme speech, transcendental word, as the transcendental word, beyond creation, the very essence of supreme reality, ever-present and pervading all. It is thus identical with pure consciousness, chit. It is the ultimate reality. It is conceived of as a luminous vibration, sphurata, within itself, or pure consciousness itself, carrying within itself the whole cosmic manifestation, which is shining within it without any differentiation. The very light, the very sphurata, the vibration within consciousness shows that there is something there, and that something is the cosmic manifestation, which is not known yet as different.
So only the potential.
Yes. He also says that Paravak is indeed present on all the levels of Pashyanti and others, for without her darkness and unconsciousness would prevail. So Paravak is not just staying abroad, but present throughout all the levels, dominating them. Everything, he says, stones, trees, birds, human beings, all of them. Present in and consisting of everything in the form of that is identical with the Supreme Lord. This statement that consciousness is pervading all the levels of creation and is expressed by all of them, is fundamental for Indian approach to language. And if this higher consciousness would not be present within the creation, all would fall back into inconscient. And this is an important definition, because that is the intention, the willpower, the Agni. That Agni, the flame of the divine will, who is there in the depth of inconscient, making it move towards itself, towards its own realization, manifestation. This view is clearly Vedic. The creation was conceived, according to the Veda, in two stages, and we know about them. First, out of himself, Supreme created all the worlds, and then he entered them. So if he would withdraw his consciousness, the luminous word, the creation would again fall into the darkness. So that word within, which is carrying out the creation up to its summit, that rising word from the ocean heart, that honey wave of the lower ocean which is reaching to the higher heaven, is what is Vedic imagery. Now André Pordu comments on the nature of the Supreme Word in his book Vach, and I like this quotation. It's taken from Abhinava Gupta. Thus we see the role played by the supreme level of the Word in this conception of the Supreme Consciousness. The latter is pure light, but in it the cosmos exists archetypically and undifferentiatedly, prior to all manifestation. This results from its twin aspect of Prakasha and Vimarsha, that is, from its being both consciousness or light and word, or to say it differently, both pure luminous Prakasha, changeless consciousness, and consciousness holding the paradigm of the cosmos in this word, which, as it were, whispers it to and within consciousness, and therefore makes it reflectively and introspectively aware, or brings about a representation of the cosmos. So within the consciousness, there is already a vision of cosmos, understanding what is to come out, but it is still within that vibration of light, in that spuratta, the vibration of pure consciousness, which is light. Light as a vibration could not be there if there would be no already representation of that cosmos within it. The possibility to manifest, the potential manifestation of cosmos. So Pashyanti, that first flash of intuitive light or how do they call it otherwise? Pratibha. Pratibha is that intuition, that poetic intuition, inspiration which comes suddenly from nowhere. What is inspiration? Have you thought about this? Inspiration. Suddenly, say, I know. What do you know? You don't know yet. You have to form it in language. You have to dress it into particular dressing before you know. And it can come into any language, into any linguistic reality. It can come into your poetic language, it can come into your musical language, and you will compose some piece, or it will come as a vision, and you will put it into the form, sculpture, any other expression, dance. And even without any other language, it can give you suddenly this light of understanding of yourself and the world, in that particular context, in that moment of time. So Pashyanti Vak works in a particular context, in a particular time, which is flashing from that beyond time and space reality of Paravak. Abhinava Gupta writes in his Tantra Loka. I will not read you Sanskrit for the sake of time. Of that Paravak, the seeing is indeed the active part, the seeing Pashyanti Vak. For she, Paravak, has two parts. The first, its inner part, and the next, its outer part of manifestation. This should be seen. Thus, the Vimarsha power of the Paravak reveals itself from its origin in the form of Pashyanti Vak. So Vimarsha, that vibration of light, reveals itself as if outside, as a flash of intuition into a particular context. So, in this first moment of cognition, there is no separation yet. There is no distinction between the signified and signifier. That scheme what I was showing you is about signified and signifier. In that moment when it flashes down, there is no yet distinction between the two, between the form and the name, between the intention, the meaning, and the form which it will take in a particular context. So Pashyanti Vak can be described as a transition from the stage of total undifferentiation to the stage of differentiation, the supreme non-supreme state of the word, parapara, as it is called. Supreme and not supreme. It is a bridge between the transcendental and this which is already differentiated, has a particular structure and context. Now, what is a cause of pashyanti? How it is invoked, set into motion? The explanation given by Abhinava Gupta is quite interesting. We already gave it this definition here. You remember what we said? Who is really calling for this every time name and makes the difference? It is this subject. There is nobody else here to do that. There is somebody here living who is absolutely actual, the Lord within us, who is doing it. And he says, whatever is thus aspired or wished for, it's interesting, wanted, is indeed awakened by the necessity of a certain action. Necessity of a certain action. And it is by only following that awareness, one has to follow that awareness, that pashyanti gets the perception of it and is set into motion. So there is somebody within us who perceives it and sees the necessity, and by that the pashyanti, the flesh, the idea what to do next is triggered. Abhinava Gupta compares it to a psychological process of memorizing, smriti, by which certain events recall certain images which appear in the consciousness, and if they were caused by this will to know, or the will to remember something which was as if forgotten. Here we can clearly see that the agent provoking the pashyanti vak is within man. It is his own aspiration towards knowing or perceiving, abhipsitam, that which is aspired from within him. Smriti, as if we are recalling, you know, we are recalling something we forgot, and forgot long ago, and then it flashes and we remember it. So the manifestation is only a revelation of that hidden meaning covered by this darkness, half light, which is becoming more and more luminous. The power of will, Ichha Shakti, which is the very characteristic of Pashyanti, is carrying within herself the power of cognition, Jnana Shakti, and the power of action, Kriya Shakti. In fact, the will to be aware, Bubhutsa, it's from root Budh, to be awakened, to be aware. Bubhutsa is a derivative from Budh. In its nature is awareness itself, he says, Bodha Svabhava. The will to be aware in its nature is awareness itself. It is awareness. How else we could be aware?
Only that which is awake is trying to awake something.
Right. Only that which is awake is trying to awake something more for its own awakening. There is also very one interesting passage with which we maybe today conclude. It is interesting to mention here how the hierarchy of Pashyanti Vak is being defined by Abhinava Gupta. According to him, there is always a greater will, Mahapashyanti, and the smaller ones, Pashyantis. For instance, and he gives this example, I go to the village, says Abhinava Gupta, and it is my main will, Mahapashyanti, but I am leaving my house, is a smaller Pashyanti. Similarly, one should see the plane of Sadashiva as a great Mahapashyanti, in comparison to which all other wills of individuals being subjects to Maya are smaller Pashyantis. We do not see the consequences of our actions. We do not know why we do this. I go to the village. Why do I go to the village? who really made me go to the village because there is something to do, and why that because is there, we also do not see. We do not see the bigger picture. But when we widen this picture, we will see that all that comes from Sadashiva, from the Lord, as a will to manifest. So all these flashes of intuition, I go to the village, but in order to go to the village, I have to lock a cupboard, to switch off light, to close my house, to buy a ticket in a bus station, to so many small pashyantis in between to be conducted before I reach the village. So the same all our lifespan, if you look at it, is this great Mahapashyanti, which is conducted throughout with those small pashyantis in order to what? To awaken, to manifest that consciousness fully here, to radiate it fully, to understand ourselves in this complexity of manifestation. So this is on the level of pashyanti. When it comes to the level of the word as a language, it is known as Madhyamavak, or that circle where all these four levels have their interaction. Madhyama literally means mediating, and I'm not sure that I have time to continue. I think it's 5 o'clock.
It's just 10 minutes.
I will take this 10 minutes to come to the language and to define the word. Means mediating, which mediates between undifferentiated and differentiated levels. Paravak is flashing with pashyanti in particular context, and it is being dressed into particular language. So I have an intuition, an inspiration, and then I am looking for the words, what it would mean, what it could mean for me and this particular context. Or I look for other means to express it. If I am dancing, and in that particular context of dance, it is flashing, and I know that it must be expressed, but I didn't find yet the means. So I am looking for those means. I am matching those means to that flash. And when it is matching, I am happy, because it is being expressed. If it is not matching, I am unhappy, because it was not expressed. And I am looking again for this expression. So Madhyama is that level of word where these two great categories of grammar match or appear. It's only on this level that distinction between Vachya and Vachaka, signified and signifier, takes place. So there is a form and there is the meaning of this form. They are closer to manifestation. It's not yet this, it's the form of a pen. And the form of the word a pen, which are already seeking its expression in language and then in manifestation. So Abhinava Gupta describes it in a very interesting way. These two elements are aiming at two different things. One is aiming at objective content, idanta, so to say, the formness, the thisness. And the other is oriented towards subjective expression of it, ahamta, I-ness. I-ness and this-ness start their play. I and the context in which I am, and we came through this structure, you remember last time, we looked into this, how I and this context relate through time, space, manner, number. These mental categories which are creating this manifestation. Here is the scheme. And finally, once it is defined, Vaikari is a manifestation of that speech in time and space with all the distinct features of language, phonemes, words, sentences. According to Abhinava Gupta, the Vaikari is only a completion of the process of Paravak, which started with Pashyanti, led through formulation of the elements in the Madhyama, and manifested in Vaikari. The Paravak is present throughout the process of manifestation and is always there before and after its manifestation. The word is only is not only manifested in terms of speech production, but also in terms of the objective reality. I don't want to dwell on Madhyama more, because there is much more to speak. It's the whole syntax and how the sentence is formed and how the text is formed. And we are coming to this next time, and we will deal exclusively with Madhyama, how syntax is formed, sentences, and what kinds of sentences we can have in different types of languages, and especially in Sanskrit. So here I would retire. There was something interesting at the end which I found, it's not in this file. We will come to this four definitions of consciousness by Sri Aurobindo in their relation to this process. I finally could see some jnana, ajnana, vijnana, prajnana, how they relate to this speech production process. Okay? So we end with a minute of silence.
Do you think that hierarchic process of language applies to any language?
Of course. To every language.
Because it applies to modern language.
So it's the relationship between idea and language.
Yes.
Is being described.
I think so.
Creative idea and expressive expression.
Right. Expression is formulating the context in which it is to be expressed, to be understood as such, in a meaningful sense. But in itself, it's something always new and fresh.